Obviously, that man is hurting. I don't know if it's financially. I don't know if it's mentally. He wants to stay relevant.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
And welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com. And you can find me, as always, on Twitter at redrock_bball. We're going to recap the four games that we had on Sunday. We're going to look at the week ahead, week 23 in the NBA, to help you guys get your lineup sorted for daily and weekly changes leagues. And then we're going to look at DFS for Monday when there are eight games on. We are also going to shine that player spotlight on a player who's become weirdly relevant at this time of the year, and that is Quinn Cook of the Golden State Warriors. So
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start by looking at the week ahead and helping you guys try and decipher that for weekly changes leagues and daily changes leagues. It is week 23 in the NBA, and we've got a very stream-friendly week. On Monday, we've got eight games, Tuesday, seven, Wednesday, eight, Thursday, six, Friday, 10, Saturday, six, and Sunday, nine. So theoretically, you could stream at least six of those days. The more realistic scenario is five of those days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday are your key streaming days, but you can really get an early leg up on the competition by streaming across those first four days. Friday might be tough when there are 10 games on, and Sunday with nine games of action, that might be a bit of a challenge to stream someone in. Maybe half of you will have an open roster spot on that day. Maybe the other half of you won't. But of course, you can create open roster spots, because when you get to that Sunday and it's a do or die playoff situation, there's no point holding onto a player who's going to help you next week if you're not there next week. And so you might be able to stream through on that day. Anyway, let's start by looking at this week and how it all shakes out from a daily changes point of view. As I said, what we want to do is be looking at streaming on those days. You're getting your players who are really going to help how your matchup looks. Look at your opponent, look where their strengths lie, look where your strengths lie, and try and really attack the categories that are either in doubt or ones that you can try and claw back off your opponent. If you're, you know, well down in the area or well up in the area, there's no real necessity to be going and attacking those categories. You're better off looking at the ones that are in doubt or in danger so you can help either defend or attack those categories. If you do have limited acquisitions, you want to make the most of your acquisitions by utilizing the back-to-backs and the pseudo-back-to-backs through the schedule. To begin the week, on Monday and Tuesday, we only have the one back-to-back going on that Monday, Tuesday, and that is the Detroit Pistons. Thankfully, there is a little bit of value there with the Pistons. You can grab guys like Jim Ennis, you can grab Stan Johnson, you can grab Dwight Bikes, Reggie Bullock, and Lukey Kennard. All have a little bit of value to help you in certain areas. And Kennard's really been trending up at the moment. Ennis is not providing a huge amount, neither is Johnson, but Bullock and Kennard could be players that you look to stream on that first back-to-back of the week. Of course, if you don't have any acquisition concerns or you've got a large acquisition limit, you're not really adding just Pistons players. Who can help me on Monday? Who can help me on Tuesday? They might be two different guys, but if you're really trying to play that acquisition game and hold on to them until the last day of the week, you're maximizing your games played while minimizing the players that you add is really key. The Tuesday, Wednesday back-to-back, we've got two teams there that have got a back-to-back, and this is the start of the back-to-back-to-back that the New Orleans Pelicans have. They play Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, so obviously there is some value there. There also is a little bit of a concern. Now, Alvin Gentry spoke about Anthony Davis, whether he would rest these games, and he wouldn't commit to resting him in any games. He said we might more cautiously manage his minutes in these games, and what I take that to mean is that they'll be quicker to pull the pin. If they're up big or if they're down a decent amount, they'll say, well, Tone, we don't need you to play 38 minutes, play 32. And they'll do similar things with Rondo, they'll do similar things with Jrue Holiday. You'll see those situations arise where it won't necessarily be he's just sitting out a game, because obviously the Pelicans need every win they can get. They're not locked into a playoff spot at all. So I imagine that Davis plays all these games. I think Holiday plays all these games. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they play the 38 or anything like that. If the games become out of hand in either direction, you're going to see those players sat down a little bit earlier on. So those Pelicans guys, They've got the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday back-to-back, and then they also play on Saturday. So there is fantastic value in Pelicans players for this week with the quality of the games that they have, you know, having games on all of these low-volume days, which is obviously really key. The other team with the Tuesday, Wednesday back-to-back is the Raptors. There's plenty of blokes there. Delon Wright, Freddie Van Vliet, if he is back from his hand issue, Pascal Siakam, Jakob Poeltl, just a ton of guys on this Raptors team who you can stream in there. The Wednesday, Thursday back-to-back, you got four teams. One of them is the Pelicans, and then you got the Grizzlies, the Sixers, and the Hornets. Some value there. Jeremy Lamb with Nick Batum dealing with Achilles tendonitis. And as for Batum, it's going to be hard, I think, to hold on to him in leagues. He's missing at least one game next week. There's no clear timetable. He might be back the next game. It doesn't appear serious, and he should be back this season, but he could also miss 3 to 4 games, so you might need to move on there. That opens up Jeremy Lamb, Trevion Graham, even Michael Kidd-Gilchrist a little bit, and a little bit of extra playing time for Malik Monk. Philadelphia, maybe you're looking at an Ilyasova or a Bellinelli or a Timothy John McConnell in that setting. Whereas the Grizzlies, there's tons of blokes. You can be looking at Dylan Brooksy Brooks. Andy Harrison could be back. You could be adding Briante Weber if you're really desperate for steals. Jarrell Martin, Jermichael Green. On this back-to-back with the Grizzlies, and Marc Gasol probably sits one of those games. So Deontay Davis, Ivan Rabb in deeper leagues come into play. Then you've got the Thursday, Saturday pseudo back-to-back, and there's tons of teams. So it's really all going to be about which stats you need here. The Grizzlies, the Pelicans, the Pistons, the Sixers, the Hornets, all those teams have already featured earlier on. So you could be adding these guys and getting more than a 2-for-1 out of them. The Rockets, the Magic, the Lakers, and the Mavericks also have that Thursday, Saturday pseudo back-to-back for you to take a look at. If you want to have a look at weekly leagues, the majority of the league plays four games this week. The Grizzlies, the Cavs, Raptors, Pelicans, Pistons, Sixers, Heat, Hornets, Rockets, Bulls, Clippers, Nets, Pacers, Hawks, Knicks, Jazz, Bucks, and Spurs all play four games this week. But of course, not all four game weeks are created equally. The Grizzlies play a very fantasy-friendly schedule. The Nets, the Sixers, the Hornets, and the Lakers. The Spurs, they take on the Warriors, they take on the Jazz, and they have the Wizards and the Bucks. So the level of matchup there is significantly different. Cavs, Raptors, and Pelicans also have a fairly fantasy-friendly schedule, especially the Cavs who end the week with the Suns and the Nets. And the Bucks and the Jazz, they have it tough. The Jazz take on the Spurs, they have the Warriors, they've got the Mavericks, whereas the Bucks take on the Clippers, Bulls, Spurs, and Cavs in there. So real big differences there. Most of your decisions are going to come down to three-game teams. No team plays two games this week, so the rest of the NBA has got three games. And you're looking at teams like Orlando, who have got the pick of the schedule with the Sixers, Suns, and Raptors on deck, whereas the Warriors, they have the Spurs, they have the Jazz, and they've got the Hawks thrown in there. So a couple of tough defensive matchups. And it's normally not all that important for the Warriors, but this week it is when we're talking about potentially relying upon players like Andre Iguodala or Nick Young or Quinn Cook or Kevon Looney. Yeah, those guys are going to be more influenced by the quality of the opponent as opposed to Steph or Clay or KD. And Steph could be back this week, but there is going to be some interesting value changes in these Warriors guys depending on how this schedule looks for them, and some of those matchups can be quite challenging for those players. So make sure you are being really careful. Your players who start missing games are in doubt and they're not high-end guys, you drop them. Because, okay, they miss a game, you could use that spot to get two games in. And obviously, two games is better than zero, and you really do need to be churning through players. Lots of opportunities are going to be opening up at this point in the season. So most players do become droppable at some point around this time of the year, with, you know, certain exceptions, but there are going to be times where you're even going to drop your first or second best player if the season's almost done and they have no more games left, then you move on and you get other guys in. So, you know, using your ads judiciously, having a look at and being, you know, cutthroat with some of your decisions is going to be key. Guys like Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, they're already missing a game next week. You probably have to piss them off and get other players in that type of situation. Let's recap a few of the teams who saw action across the weekend who aren't normally going to be a feature of today's show. The first one we talk about is the Utah Jazz, a team that is unbelievably flying high at the moment. They have won 21 of their past 23 games. They're the NBA's best team in terms of defensive rating and overall net rating since that streak began. Just putting up numbers that are quite ludicrous at the moment, but it's mainly their big names. Don Mitchell, Ravishing Rick Rubio, Rudy Gobert. Very few guys sort of coming out of the woodwork, with the exception of Jay Crowder, who's outperforming Derek Favors in most games, and he does have a role to play on some 12-team leagues. He's going to be more of that guy that you stream in on certain days rather than someone that is a must-grab and must-hold player, but he does have some value, and he's consistently getting more minutes than what Favors is, which is something I didn't necessarily think would be the case, but the Jazz are definitely going in that direction at the moment. We still haven't heard any news on Johnny Wall's return, so Tomas Satoransky's still starting. Wall could be back this week, but of course you would imagine he is going to be on limited minutes when he does return. Markieff Morris still playing well. Otto Porter wasn't quite as good over the weekend, but Marcin Gortat had a real throwback game. He had 18 and 8 with a steal and a block in 25 minutes. I wouldn't be looking at this as anything more than a level of fluke, and wouldn't be like rushing to grab Gortat, but I'm sure none of you guys are considering that at this point. The Atlanta Hawks, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, I have to give him a shout out. He dropped 38 points over the weekend. His usage is through the roof. He's shooting well. He's doing everything. He is a clear must-own player. Well, the Undertaker, he's going to get a retrospective Richie Beno here.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
2 steals, 2 blocks, and 2 triples for the Undertaker in 31 minutes. Now, the Baptist John Collins, he left with an ankle injury, not before he put up a 15 and 12 double-double in 27 minutes. You have to have a look, and so we haven't got any updates on the status, but if he misses a game, if he's ruled out, then he's a guy that you can consider someone to move on from. As much as I like him, you miss a game in the playoffs, you're done. At a level like that, and you go and add the Undertaker, or you add his replacement, which would most likely be Mike Muscala, who's solid again with 12 points in 28 minutes. Damian Lee is still getting minutes, wasn't a great night, but he is a deeper league target that seems to be consistently getting playing time for this Atlanta team. The Dallas Mavericks, Dennis Smith was absolutely flying, and then he hurt his ankle, and he's already ruled out for one game next week. And again, when you're already ruled out for a game at this point with an ankle injury and leaving you just 2 more games for the week, and those 2 more games that the Mavericks play, the first one of those is against the Jazz, really tough to hold on to Dennis Smith for a 2-game week, so you're probably going to have to move on there. And he was just really starting to crank out some big, big numbers before that injury. The Mavs are also resting players. The Pencil, JJ Barea, and Nerlens Noel also rested across the weekend. Noel had a 5-steal, 3-block game, and we know how valuable he is in that area. He is an elite defensive stat streaming sort of a player, but numbers and playing time is going to be all over the place. We had a game where Jalen Jones played 29 minutes, and that is a real person, and he is a real player, and he played well. So we really do need to pay some attention to how these things are going. Barea, not a must-own guy. If you need to drop Harrison Barnes in some cases with only 3 games and a tough matchup, maybe you have to do it. That's just really dependent on how your team looks and how your matchup is currently sitting, or how it sits during the week. The Phoenix Suns, Joshy Jackson was bananas. 36-6-4 with 2 steals and a block on the weekend, and TJ Warren hurt his knee. Now, we don't have any notification that Warren is going to miss time. He's currently day-to-day, but I would imagine that he misses at least 1 game, which makes Jackson a guy that you want to add. Devin Booker also missed on the weekend. I imagine he'll be back, so that drops down the value that Troy Daniels had, which was good over the weekend. Well, Alex Len, he's starting with Tyson Chandler up, he's doing nothing, so very little for you to get excited about there. And Lord Alfred Payton just can't seem to crack 30 minutes anymore, so really hard to consider him a must-own guy at this point in the season. Aaron Gordon apparently felt like he was ready to go, and they made an appeal to the NBA to get him into this game, so you'd have to think that he will be back for the next game. That's going to hurt probably Mario Hezonja and John Isaac together. Isaac had himself 2 steals and 2 blocks, and along with Noel, one of the preeminent defensive stats streamers on the wire. DJ Augustin was strong again. He should be owned. Well, Shelvin Mack had a pretty nice game, 16 points with 3 steals, but he is still more of that deeper league streaming type of a player rather than a must-own guy. All right, let's go to the monstrous line of the night now. It goes to Russell Westbrook of the Oklahoma City Thunder. 37, 13, and 14 for Westbrook. He had a 3. He had 2 steals, and he was 15 of 22 from the field and 6 of 8 from the free throw line. He's worked his way back to being the 12th overall ranked player this year in large part is not as high as what he was last year, because his free throw percentage has gone from being a Z score of 1.5 to being a Z score of negative 0.1. That is a negative 2.5 Z score dip in value, and that's caused him to fall from being the second ranked player to the 12th ranked player. He's only 0.3 rebounds off averaging a triple-double again. Yes, he is averaging 6 points per game less, and over half of the threes that he hit last year, he's not hitting them this season. But the other numbers are all pretty similar, and in fact, his efficiency has gone up from 42 to 45% from the field. So he is starting to really, you know, come together okay now. The free throw percentage seemed to have fixed itself, but over the last 7 games, he's back down at 72% after being up at 80% over the last 2 months. So it's been a weird season with his free throw percentage, and the dip back down now is obviously not coming at an ideal time. The waiver wire line of the night goes to the Chief, El-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Turns out he was good. 16, 8, and 6, 4 triples, 3 steals, 6 of 12 from the field from the Chief. He has been a disappointment this season for majority of it, but he is still a top 120 player this year. And you'd ask, you know, how is that the case? Well, he's averaging over 7 rebounds per game. That's a positive. Almost 2 threes per game and a steal per game. But obviously, he does very little in the points. He gets no assists. He is a poor field goal percentage guy and a below average free throw percentage player. I don't think that he's someone you absolutely need to run out and add or anything along those lines, but he can be an interesting rebound, steals, threes, streaming combo, which is not an easy combination to get necessarily, but he can be one of those players. And when he goes through some interesting shooting times, which again, this game was a pretty good representation, and he's been at 50% in 2 of his last 3 games with multiple triples in all of those, he does have some value. And in fact, over the last week, he's a top 60 player. Of course, that's an extraordinarily small sample size, and we know he has the penchant to disappear and to be sometimes maybe shit. We've seen that from him many times, but add him if you need it and cut him if it's not coming. And that's probably the more likely scenario. The young gun of the night is Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics, 23 points with 5 rebounds and an assist. He hit 2 threes, he had 2 steals, and he was 9 of 14 from the field. Disappointing from the line, just 3 of 5. And he's starting to see his shooting percentages, I guess, come back a bit. Over the last month, he's back to 42% from 3. The last few games haven't been ideal, as he's been dealing with an increased offensive workload with so many injuries on this team. He is still the 84th ranked player for the year, but over the last 3 months, he's 135th. The last 2 months, 154th. And the numbers have really started to dip with him, and you're more in line with what I expected from Tatum heading into this season. Just average numbers in pretty much every category, and that's what he's been producing for this second half of the season. I still think that he is a guy that you probably want to own, and if he appears on your waiver wire, you take a look at it and you go, how does it fit? Who do I drop? Is he better than my worst player? How does it fit schedule-wise? How does it fit opponent-wise? How does it fit team build-wise? You take a really long, hard look at it, and you probably make that add in a lot of cases. But far from being a must-own guy, just given the substandard contributions in many categories and the fluctuating three-point shooting that we're seeing from him, you know, pretty much most of these games, he's wildly inconsistent at the moment and nowhere near where he was to begin the season. I don't think that he's ever got top 30 upside. I could very well be wrong there. I know people are really, he's probably the king of the rookie Dutch Rudders at the moment, and they're really, really keen on him. He's been super impressive, and I really love what he can do. I just don't love him as a top 30 fantasy guy, just because I think that there's just too many average contributions for this guy in these categories. Will he ever be a 25-point scorer that averages 8 rebounds or 4 assists or gives you 2 steals per game? I think the answer to all those is probably no, and that takes him away from being that top 30, top 25 sort of a guy. Could very well be wrong. I'm not, you know, set in stone in that. That's sort of the way that I look at him from a fantasy point of view. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Al Horford, he has not been hot at all lately. He was poor here, 6-4 with 3 assists and a block, 3 of 11 from the field. And over the last month, he's the 176th ranked player. That's obviously not good enough, 10-6 with 3 assists. But he is not a player that I'd be considering dropping. He is still a top 50 guy on the season, but why has he been so poor lately? Well, over that last month, he's shooting 39% from the field, and over the season, he's shooting 49%. The three-point percentage has dropped from 42 down to 33%. So we're talking just a significant dip in efficiency, which is just as likely to come back up and for him to put up a run of, you know, 4 or 5 games with a true shooting of over 60%. He's still getting his 3 assists per game. He's still getting his 6 or 7 rebounds per game. He's still getting you close to a block a game and half a steal per game. Like, that's all sort of in that same spot. But the dip in efficiency is really impacting his point scoring, his 3-point shooting, and that field goal percentage category. And that's caused such a significant drop from Al Horford. So if he was dropped in my league, I would grab him without any sort of level of hesitation at all. All right, let's get into these games. Let's break down the action that we saw across Sunday's 4 games. There was only 4 of them, of course, so let's talk about them. Talk about them now. The first game we want to look at is the early one, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Toronto Raptors. A big win for the Thunder. Paulie George had 22-5 with 3 steals, while Melo had 15-2, but added in the other categories, 2 assists, a steal, and a block. That was nice. And Adams had 25-8. So big games from their big stars, while Corey Brewer only scored the 10 in this game, which is well down from what he's been doing, but still chipped in with 3 steals. And at this point, you have to be considering Corey Brewer a player that you own in 12-team leagues, and that is just a crazy, crazy thing to think. With the way Brewer's been playing, Jeremy Grant has seen his minutes dip. He was only a deeper league sort of guy, but for now he's probably transitioning more to 18-team leagues instead of 16-teamers. On the Raptors, Kyle Lowry had 22-4-10, a big night from him after the 1 game of rest. DeMar DeRozan and Serge Ibaka were both ejected late, didn't really impact their minutes too much. And Freddie VanVleet was out. That meant that DeLon Wright was able to go off again. 15-2-8 with 2 steals. He was excellent when he replaced Kyle Lowry in the start across the weekend as well. And you know I've been a big DeLon Wright fan. He suffered that injury in the middle of the season and then struggled on his return and saw Fred VanVleet probably leap over him. But Wright can still do it. He can still put up the numbers. The assists and steals combination is really valuable. But of course, these 2 games came, one without Lowry and one without VanVleet. So it seems unlikely that he'll be able to keep up this level of playing time. Siakam was strong again, 10 points on a perfect 5-of-5 shooting, but more of a streamer. While Valanciunas got into foul trouble, only saw 22 minutes and had 10 points. And the Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
He had 5 points in his 13 minutes, just really not a fantasy option at all at this point. The Boston Celtics got pumped by the New Orleans Pelicans. Terry Rozier had 13-7-5, another strong game with Kyrie Irving out. Of course, he is a must-own guy, at least until Irving returns, while Marcus Morris took advantage as well, 17-6 in 30 minutes. But when Irving and Jaylen Brown are both back, I think that Morris loses a chunk of playing time and probably goes back to the bench, while Greggy Munro had 12-6.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Munro is putting up some good numbers, good scoring, good efficiency, getting a fair chunk of steals as well. And that's something he does do as a big man, is get a lot of steals. And he is going to have a more consistent and larger role with Daniel Tice out for the rest of the season. But of course, when Brown and Irving come back, you might think, how does that impact what Munro can do? Well, what it does is it pushes Marcus Morris away from the small forward position and moves him back into the power forward position, taking some minutes away from Al Horford at power forward and pushing him towards center, and then someone has to lose out, and it's Baines and not saying Morris doesn't lose minutes, but Baines and Munro lose some playing time there as well. So it's a bit of a cascade effect that can go on. Shani Larkin can be a steals streamer as well, as long as Kyrie is out. He only had 5 points with no steals in this game, but played 28 minutes. That will start to come down. On the Pelicans, Tone Davis had 34-11. He was monstrous again. Well, Nick Mirotic, a big game for Mirotic, 16-10 with 3 steals and 2 blocks, but still only 23 minutes, and that's the worrying sign. Him coming off the bench with a Mecca Okafor starting is really putting a dent into his overall playing time, and it is hard to label him as a 10-team must-own guy at this point. He's probably still a 12-teamer, but hitting into those low 20 minutes, it is a tougher ask. My boy Cheick Diallo was great. 17-6 in 24 minutes. I've long been calling for this guy to get more playing time. I wanted him to play over Emeka Okafor, and he actually did in this game. He played more minutes than Okafor, who had 8-7. Diallo can be a real fantasy start. I'm not thinking it's going to happen necessarily this season, but he is definitely a player you want to watch for. Rajon Rondo rested across the weekend. He returned. He had 4 points in 32 minutes with 11 assists. The minutes are nice. The assists are nice. but the fluctuations in performance will still be there. While Solomon Hill finally returned to action, his first game for the season, 8 minutes with one assist. So he's not going to be a big fantasy guy in 12, 14, 16, or 18 team leagues, really, but he could have an impact of limiting Rondo's minutes as they go more Ian Clark, Drew Holiday, and Hill comes in and plays some of that wing role that Etuan Moore had been playing. I think you're also going to see DeAndre Liggins forced out of the rotation, which I could not be happier about because he's not good. Drew Holiday also had a real stinker, 7 points in 28 minutes and battled some foul trouble, but the Pelicans got the victory in the end. The Rockets and the Timberwolves, big win for the Rockets. They were up huge early, and the Timberwolves fought back. Harden was great, 34-4-12. Chris Paul had 18-8-12, and Capella had 16-12 with 3 blocks. Interestingly, since Ryan Anderson's been back the last 2 games, Nene has been a DMP CD. They're playing Joe Johnson or Gerald Green instead of him and using Ryan Anderson almost exclusively as a center so they can give more minutes to PJ Tucker and Luke Marmute. So it'll be interesting to see whether that continues. As for Anderson, he played 17 minutes here. He shot the ball really well, 14 points with 4 triples, but he is a specialist 3-point guy. While Gerald Green played over Joe Johnson in this game and then got ejected for smashing Gorgui Dieng. 12 points for him in 15 minutes and not a regular member of the rotation, while Eric Gordon shouldn't be a regular member of your fantasy rotation. 5 points in 30 minutes, I've harped on and on and on about this. When they're healthy, he is not a must-own player, and this is exactly why. On the Timberwolves.
My name is Jeff.
23-6-11 for Jeff Teague with 2 steals, while Townsie had 20-18 and Jamal Crawford chipped in with 20 points in 28 minutes. But I do have to mention Derrick Rose, who had 14 points in 19 minutes. I thought he struggled significantly in his first stretch of the game, but he played quite well in the fourth quarter, was explosive, had a few nice cuts, still can't shoot, and I don't understand the logic of playing a lineup to close the game with him and Jeff Teague in there, along with Wiggins, Towns, and Gibson when you're down by 10 points and you need threes. It's just an absolutely baffling coaching decision to have him out there. But he played well. He missed a couple of easy ones at the rim, but got a nice offensive rebound and put one in, and did play pretty well, almost his best stretch of the season. It doesn't mean you want anything to do with him in fantasy, and it also doesn't mean that I think he's a good player anymore. It was a nice stretch, and I do have to give him credit for that. Bielitsa, 15-6 in 35 minutes. Didn't do the defensive stuff, which had been really buoying his numbers, and they were things that were sort of out of the ordinary for Nemanja. It still needs to be owned, but those high steals and high block numbers, they're just not something that you really should be expecting him to do consistently. The Blazers win their 13th consecutive game on the back of the Chief and Mo Harkless, who had 21-5-2 with 3 triples and 2 steals. And you can look at Harkless's last 3 games and go, man, he scored in double digits in all 3 of those. Is he an ad? Well, let me tell you what's happened in those games. Is he shot at least 60% of the field from the field in those 3 games, and that is something that he has no business doing and will not continue to do. So, sure, it's been great, and if for some reason you picked him up before this 3-game streak, you got these nice games out of him. It just won't continue. He just cannot shoot this well. He's not a good shooter, and he's definitely not a 73% shooter. If you need some steals, fine. Go and add him. That can work out for you. But he's not going to be this sort of offensive output guy. McCollum had 21 and Lillard had 23, while Nurk had 17-12 with 4 blocks, and Eddie Davis fouled out in only 11 minutes. Not great from Eddie. On to the Clippers. Montrezl Harrell's minutes had been fading quite a bit recently, but he jumped back up and had 24-7 with 2 blocks in only 20 minutes. I wouldn't say that he is a must-own player, but he is someone that you can look at if his strengths, being field goal percentage, points, and rebounds, do really work to your advantage. His free throws are a massive, massive issue. He was 6 of 10 from the line in this game, and that's something to pay attention to. Milos Teodosic replaced Lou Williams in the starting lineup, but their minutes remained as they were before, so very little's changing there in terms of their overall fantasy value, while Sindarius Thornwell remained the starter and remained doing very little. Could be a steals streamer sort of a guy. He had another 2 here, but not really your must-own fantasy player or anything like that, but I'm sure you're all aware of that. But the minutes are fine, and that's a positive for deeper leagues, no doubt about that. All right, let's go player spotlighting now. We're going to go to the Golden State Warriors, and we're going to look at a player who's seen himself really thrust into relevancy recently, and that is Quinn Cook, a player on a 2-way contract for the Warriors who's been lighting it up for the Santa Cruz Warriors and now has come in and has been lighting it up for the Golden State Warriors. His last 3 games in particular have been spectacular. The last two games, he has played 40 minutes and he has scored 25 and 28 points, which included 10 combined threes, 7 combined assists, 8 rebounds, and 5 steals. But very Mo Harklessly, Harklessly, he's been shooting ridiculously, 77% in one of those, 65 in the other one, and over the last week, he is the 13th ranked player, averaging 22 points on 63% shooting and almost 4 triples per game. Now, Steph Curry is due to return at some point this week, it appears. He may not, but he should be back at some point this week. And that's obviously going to put a big dent into Cook's value. Pat McCaw is also scheduled to return next game. So you're going to have Steph, McCaw, Livingston, and Cook as the point guard rotation. And for as well as Cook has played, he doesn't offer as much flexibility as what Livingston does, nor McCaw. So he's not going to be a long-term asset. But in saying all of this, Quinn Cook's a guy I thought was quite a good player. When I saw him at Summer League, I thought he played fairly well last season for the Pelicans. He was on the Hawks roster to begin this season, and then they cut him. I thought they definitely should have kept him around. I think he is an NBA player. I think he can play a Shabazz Napier type of role, a 15 to 17 minute backup role. Maybe not quite as high as what Napier does, but he has been definitely impressive in this little stretch here. Defense is still a real worry with him, as it has been throughout his career, but his shooting is up this year. He was at 58 true shooting last year in his 14 games, is at 59 this year, both well above average. And in his time for the G League this season, he is shooting 44% on threes. He's averaging 25 points with 8 rebounds and over a steal per game in 36 minutes, shooting 52% from the floor. He is too good for the G League. He's carving it up there, and he's shown that he can stick in the NBA, and he can become at least a third-string point guard. No doubt about that in my mind. I think he's a superior player to, say, a guy like Jaren Grant in Chicago as a third-string point guard. Yeah, superior guy to those Hawks guys like Malcolm Delaney and Isaiah Taylor. He can shoot. He can pass. He can score. The defense is a real worry for him, and that's probably going to hold him back from ever ascending into becoming a starting point guard. But I could see a situation where he becomes a backup point guard. I think he's a better player than Manuel Mudiay. I could see him becoming a backup point guard, being a 17-minute per game sort of a guy who does hit 1.7 threes per game and averages, you know, 7 or 8 points with 3 assists. And in some fantasy league setups, that can be valuable. And then when given the opportunity, when the starter goes down, we know he can step in. He can average, you know, 16 or 17 points and give you 2 to 2.5 threes and 4 or 5 assists per game. Really valuable numbers. So it's good to see when you see someone play G League and you see someone play last year and then they get another opportunity this year and the same thing happens. That's like 3 repeatable instances of the way they play. And you go, well, okay, I think he can be a decent enough scorer and passer and shooter in the league to have a career that's not just as a two-way guy, but him going further than that, I think, is probably a little bit of wishful thinking if you're expecting him to ever develop into a starting caliber point guard. I just don't think that he is big enough or good enough to do that. He is already 25 years of age already. So in terms of development, there's not a huge amount of that left in the old setting for him. Let's talk DFS now. We'll go straight on to the perfect DFS lineup from Sunday. It's the main slate, so just the last 3 games. Chrissy Paul had 41.1 on FanDuel with Jeff Teague at 49.7. They're your point guards. At shooting guard, Jimmy Harden 61.8 and Lou Williams 39.2. Small forwards were Jace Tatum at 34.5 and Mo Harkless at 36, while power forwards was Nick Mirotic at 44.5 and the table, Montrezl Harrell 44.9. At center, Yusuf Nurkic 41.9 for a total of 393.6, and that cost $59,800. On DraftKings, Jimmy Harden had 63.5 and Jamal Crawford had 28.75. Mo Harkless 35.75 and Tone Davis had 57.25. The table had 42.75. Jeff Teague 52.5. The Chief had 42.5 and Nick Mirotic had 43.5. And that totaled 366.5 for a total cost of $49,400 dues. All right, let's get into talking about Monday's action. As I said earlier, There are 8 games on in the NBA, so let's talk about some DFS action that will be going down there. The first game, the Charlotte Hornets and the Philadelphia 76ers. As I mentioned earlier, Nick Batum has been ruled out of this one, so that's opening up minutes, a lot of minutes, for a guy like Jeremy Lamb. An increase for Malik Monk and perhaps Trevion Graham as well, but Jeremy Lamb should be the bigger winner there. Cody Zeller is also doubtful, still dealing with that knee soreness. At point guard, we're looking at McConnell at 3,700, probably not that interesting there, while Kemba's at 7,800. Now, Kemba's played well against Philadelphia. The recent production, though, for him in general, he's averaging under 30 over the last 5. The minutes have been a little bit lower than what we'd like, down at 34, when he'd previously been getting about 36 per game. If I would use Kemba here, especially with the Ben Simmons matchup, it's only going to be as a tournament guy. For the shooting guards, Redick's at 5,000, and JJ's been putting up about 25 to 26 a night recently. So I don't think there's a huge upside in him, I think that for cash, it's not a bad, solid shooting guard type of a guy. Bellinelli's probably not someone I'm all that keen on, while Malik Monk at 3,800. He played well in the last game, 23 points in 23 minutes. Could be an interesting tournament sort of player to take a look at, but that would be about it. I don't think we really need to get too interested in Malik Monk in any cash game setting. Jez Lamb's the one we want to look at, 4,800 for Jezza. When Batum was out earlier this season, he was constantly crushing that number. He had a 53-point game earlier this season. I'm not saying he's getting to that, but I feel pretty good about him beating 4,800, and to me, he feels like an absolute cash game lock. Kid Gilchrist at 3,900 has a little bit of upside there, but I wouldn't be getting overly excited, while Bob Cove at 6,000 had been playing a little bit better lately, but I think that $6,000 price tag takes away a lot of Covington's value. At power forward, Frank the Tank's at 43. He could get some extra run if Kid Gilchrist is forced more down to the 3, along with Marvin Williams, to fill in a little bit for Batum. Kaminsky is a hit or miss type of guy, making him an interesting tournament guy only. Well, Dario Saric at 7,200. Sorry, mate. That is too high. At center, the process... Benny Simmons has got him. 9,700 for Benny. It's pretty high. It's very high, in fact. And I think Simo at 9,700 is probably only tournament worthy. Much like Joel Embiid is at center at 10,900. Those prices are just too high for me to get really interested in cash. Although Embiid, with centers putting up big numbers against Dwight Howard so far, or recently anyway, Embiid is worth a look as a tournament guy, but I'm not keen in cash. While Howard's at 8,400, has done okay against Embiid so far, but nothing spectacular to write home about, and that salary doesn't get me overly interested in using him either. On DraftKings, there are 4 guys who I do like for cash here. I like Embiid and Simmons. Their prices are much cheaper, 9.5 and 8.5 respectively, while Saric is down at 6.1, which is a far more reasonable price tag, and Jezza Lamb at 42, of course, really strong option to use him on both sides, particularly on DraftKings. That is a stupendously good price, but he could very easily shit the bed because they could go with a different direction. I just don't think they will. The next game we're going to take a look at is the Los Angeles Lakers in the Indiana Pacers. No DeMontis Sabonis for Indiana, while Miles Turner is currently questionable with his ankle. And for the Lakers, Brandon Ingram is out, and you've got Brooke Lopez and Kyle Kuzma both listed as probable. At point guard, Daz Collison's coming off the bench still, but playing more minutes than Corey Joseph the last 2 games, and he's at 5,700. The matchup's neutral for him against the Lakers. The numbers have been okay, but I think there are other options out there that you want to use ahead of Daz Collison. You could use him in a tournament because of the uncertainty. I just don't think his ceiling's high enough. I'm not really interested in Corey Joseph. Isaiah Thomas at 6,400. Really tough defensive matchup against the Pacers. They've restricted point guards for big chunks of the season. You could always throw Thomas into a GPP, as you could do with Lonzo at 7,500, but I'd feel much more comfortable putting Lonzo Ball in there, who can rack up numbers in so many different categories, even if his shot doesn't fall. At shooting guard, Oladipo's at 9,100. He's been nowhere near that recently, averaging just 34 over his last 5, but he's had a consistent floor. But is it high enough for cash games? I'm not sure that it is. I think this is a bit of a dip in his value, so I'm not really that interested. While Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at 6,000 had been putting up some pretty okay numbers, but recently the numbers have dipped, and Oladipo's defense could be a real problem for KCP, so I'm not feeling super strongly on him. At small forward, Bojan Bogdanović has really shit the bed lately, averaging 10 points over his last three. I think I did an interestingly enough deep dive into him the other day and said that this is not going to continue, and almost on cue, he's just become useless. Always just a GPP guy. Lance Stevenson had a big blow up across the weekend. We can't put really much trust in Stevo at this point. At power forward, love Julius Randle here, 7,400. He feels like he's getting 40 every night, and I feel like he can do it again here. I love him here. Well, Thaddeus Young's down at 5,100 because he hasn't been great. But prior to last game's shit the bed action, he'd been putting up a couple of strong games, and without Sabonis around, he's got another opportunity here to get his minutes back up to 30, 34, and really get another 30-point game. So I do like Thad here. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, looks like he'll play, and he should start at small forward, so at 6,200, I'm totally fine with getting on board with him as well. At center, we've got Miles Turner and Brookie Lopez, 6,900 for Lopez, 6,700 for Turner. I'm not sure if any one of these guys will actually grab a rebound in this game. Who would I prefer? Probably Lopez. A, he's not questionable, and B, he's been outperforming Turner recently. But you could put either of them into a tournament, and I wouldn't feel good about using either of those guys in a cash setting. Let's go over to DraftKings. I think that Lopez and Isaiah Thomas, who's down at 5,900, are appealing tournament guys, whereas Kuzma, Oladipo, and Randle are good cash options. Randle is priced up on DraftKings as opposed to FanDuel at 8,300, while Oladipo's down at 87, but they both still make some pretty good value options over there on that site. Let's go on to the next game now. We've got the Milwaukee Bucks and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs are favored by 2.5 points, and the total is 223.5, but we don't know the status of Larry Nance Jr., of Rocket Rodney Hood, or Kyle Korver, so lots of different ways things can go for the Cavs. Does Jose Calderon get another start? Does Ante Zizic come in? What happens with Jeff Green's minutes?
My name is Jeff.
Does the plumber have an out-of-the-box performance, J.R. Smith? So many different things can go on with this Cavs team. For the Bucks, Tyler Zeller missed the last game with back soreness, and that pushed Thon McCurr into that role, but that's not really impacting DFS at all. At point guard, Georgie Hill's at 4,600. Got big minutes last game, did very little with them, and if you're going to use Hill, it only has to be as a GPP guy. Well, Eric Bledsoe at 8,000 has really played very well against the Cavs, averaging 47 against them the last three. We've seen multiple point guards go big against this Cleveland team. So 8,000 for Bledsoe, it seems like a lot, but it's actually not that far out of reach for him, and I think it can be considered without being a must-own or must-roster guy. Brando Jennings at 3,800. Didn't play well last game, but still had 18 points. Sure, you want to throw him into a tournament. The matchup's pretty nice, but the last time he had a good matchup against the Magic, he had about 2 points. So really hard to consider using him, I think. At shooting guard, you're looking at Jordy Clarkson at 4,500, who could see him push to mid-30s in minutes, depending on the status of Hood and Korver. So he's a name to watch there, but probably still more a tournament guy. But if both those blokes are out, I think he could be a cash guy. While Kyle Korver at 48, that's a pretty expensive price for Korver, but he's averaging 25 over the last three. So if he's in and Hood is out, I think he would be, he might lean cash, but probably still more tournament for Korver. Chrissy Middleton, 7,400, really reliable, solid floor, no problem in cash. Maybe the tournament upside's not quite there, but it's pretty solid. Rocket and the Plumber, very hard to use either of those guys. If Hood plays, he'll be on limited minutes, and Smith only played 22 minutes last game despite everybody being out. At small forward, a few big names here.
LeBron James.
He's at 13,100, yuck. Yanni is at 12,500. Also pretty yuck, but these guys are putting up the numbers. Yanni's coming off a 74-point game. LeBron's coming off a 68-point game, but I don't want to be spending 13,000 on LeBron, and 12,500 for Yanni seems like a high price. I think they're both pretty strongly in fade territory here, just because those prices are exorbitant. At power forward, Larry Nance is at 7,500. Too expensive, and we don't know he's going to play, so that's a fade. Well, Jeff Green at 4,900. I'm in on Green. He's going to start regardless, and he could see himself push to high 30s, 40s minutes. In on using him, which is, again, not something I expected to say. Jabari Parker at 5,000, he is doing very little. He's played well against Cleveland in the past. The minutes just aren't there for him. Maybe you could throw him in a tournament if they push him to 28 or 29 minutes, but it seems unlikely at this point. Well, the Muppet John Henson at 6,000, I think he might struggle a little bit here. He's played decently well recently, but 6,000 is just too high of a price tag. At center, you've got Zizic, Zala, and McKerr. As for Ante at 3,900, if we get Nance ruled out, I think he is a strong cash play guy. He does put up numbers. He gets rebounds. He scores. He does it efficiently. He can block shots, and he should be a lock for 20 points if Nance is ruled out, which we don't have any word on just at this point. All right, let's have a look at how that all shakes out on DraftKings. Korver's a tournament guy at 4,300. Still like Jeff Green at 48. And LeBron and Yanni, I love them on DraftKings. 11.7 for LeBron and 10.8 for Antetokounmpo. They are strong cash plays and they are tournament options. Really, yeah, much different to how it is on FanDuel. Bledsoe at 7,600, still in a pretty positive situation. And Middleton at 75 has a little bit of cash value on DraftKings as well. All right, let's turn it on to the next game now. We've got the Chicago Bulls and the New York Knicks. No spread currently out for this game because we don't know the status of a couple of guys. The only one really, though, is Noah Vonleh. He is questionable. We know Chris Dunn is out. We know Zach LaVine is out. We know Lauri Markkanen is out. Courtney Lee is also probable to return, so no doubt he'll return to the starting lineup and further impact Frank Ntilikina's development. If Vonleh is in, I think he's an interesting option. If Vonleh is out, then you're looking at guys like Paul Zipser and a little bit of a boost for a player like Chris Felizio. With the Bulls, it's really hard to know what they're doing. Will Justin Holiday play? Will Robin Lopez play? How much will they play? So they are quite tough decisions. How does that impact guys like David Nwaba or Denzel the Hammer Valentine? At point guard, though, we know it's going to be my boy Campaign. He's at 4,900. He started the last game, put up 27 points, and it wasn't even his best game. I think he is a very, very strong cash play and tournament option, whereas Antonio Blakeney at 3,900, he's going to jack shots. Maybe one of these days it goes in, especially in a super-friendly matchup against the Knicks. I like him as a tournament guy. I don't like him as an NBA player, but I do like him as a tournament option here. Manny Moutier is at 5,100. If there was ever a team that he was going to put up big numbers against, this is it. Absolutely no use in playing him in cash, but in tournaments, sure. It's got some upside because of the opposition. You can say the same for Trey Burke. Also, Ntilikina, yeah, 3,900. Actually, did well last game, 25 points, but he'll get dicked around some way, somehow. Timmy Hardaway Jr. is at 6,300. I feel like that's pretty good for cash against this Bulls team. He should be able to get 30 without too much of a hassle. While Justin Holiday and Courtney Lee, do they play 12 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes? Who knows? You just don't want them either way. The Hammer Denzel Valentine, 6,300. I've been telling you guys for 2 years, he has got a really, really good fantasy game, and he got the opportunity and he took advantage. He dropped 54 FanDuel points in 39 minutes last game, and with LaVine and Dunn out, he should see himself starting again. He should see himself playing big minutes again. But that price rise to 6,300 is a real concern, but not enough for me to say don't use him. I think he can still exceed that. His ability to get steals, rebounds, assists, hit threes and score should be able to push him over the line there. Nwaba at 4,100, I just don't see really massive upside for him, and the playing time and production has been well down of recent times. Mick Beasley at 5,700 really was terrible in the last game, starting alongside Lance Thomas, but he is a tournament-y type of guy, but with Thomas around, I find it hard to get involved, and I wouldn't want to use Thomas or Troy Williams either. At power forward, Noah Vonleh's at 3,800. If he plays, I think he's a lock to break 20 points. He's averaging 23 over the last three. But we don't know if he's going to play with this injury. But if he does play, I think he's a strong cash bang. Let's lock it in, get myself 23, you know, give some value, and let's get in some other high price guys. There's a lot of value to be had in this matchup. PunchBob Shiploke's at $7,000. I also think he's not a bad cash option. He's averaging 33 over the last five, is old Bob Portis, and been putting up some good numbers despite coming off the bench. It's not the death knell for players. At center, Enes Kanter's at 5,900. The minutes were well down last game with foul trouble. He's not really going to approach 27 or 28 minutes, so he's a harder one to use. While Kylo Quinn at 5,800, I just hate that price. I like what Cock can do. I just really hate that price tag on him, so hard to get behind that. Let's have a look over on DraftKings. A bunch of guys I like for cash. The Hammer, Punch Bob, Timmy Hardaway, and Campaign are all really strong. In fact, the Hammer and Campaign, along with Jez Lamb, are pretty strong cash locks, I think, and you'll see them in a lot of cash lineups. Not necessarily they won't necessarily be the best lineups, but they should be enough to get you cash and get some other guys into the fold. Chris Felizio at minimum $3,500. He had a nice 28-point double-double last game. So if we have Vonleh out, there's some value there in Felizio, at least to bring back 20 or 25 points, while Antonio Blakeney at $3,200 also has that real high upside just because of the jacking of shots and the opposition, but the low floor because he is not a good player. So that's how he looks to me. All right, let's have a look at the next one. We're looking at the Memphis Grizzlies. We're looking at the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets are favored by 4.5. The total is 211 points. Andy Harrison has been upgraded to questionable in this game, while the blue swimmer, who's missed the last two due to an illness, Alan Crabb, he is probable for this game. At point guard, Spencer Dinwiddie's been coming off the bench, but he has played over 30 in those last two games. But at 6,500, with the likelihood that Crabb pushes back into the rotation, makes it hard for me to think that Dinwiddie's going to be a must roster guy or anything like that. Briante Weber and Andy Harrison, the other point guards, along with Chalmers, very little interest despite how positive the matchup is against point guards when you're going into the Nets. D'Angelo Russell's at 6,900. He's been starting at point guard. I think he is worth a look, but that price might be just a little bit too high. I do like it for tournaments, again, especially with the matchup being okay, going up against Memphis, although it's not Kobe Simmons that's guarding now at point guard. You know, Tyreek's doing that. Briante Weber's throwing in there, and they're a little bit better at that spot. Tyreek at $8,000. Since he's been back, he's averaging 40 points a game, and that's exactly what you want. It's a positive matchup for Tyreek. I still have a little bit of worry at that price in using him for cash, and I probably wouldn't, just in case they, you know, if they get too close and they decide to sit him down the stretch. Caris LeVert at $6,300 is pushing a little bit too high as well. Small forward, you got the blue swimmers at $5,200. I want nothing to do with that. I think the upside's limited. I think the floor's shaky. While Jumpin' Joe Harris had been starting in his place and likely won't anymore. Damari Carroll at $6,200 had a real big game across the weekend, 40 points in that one, but I think that price is too high for him, and Crabb coming back also should squeeze a couple of minutes off the top of him. Dylan Brooksy Brooks at $5,400, scoring at a really high rate at the moment, but yeah, scoring at high rates can be a little bit unpredictable, and if he's not doing too much else, he's a little bit hard to rely upon, especially when you're at $5,400, so I'd like to go in a different direction. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's been killing it. $6,600 salary, averaging 36 over his last five. How do they work? Crabb coming back, does that take a little bit away from Rondae? Does he move back to the bench? I think that's unlikely. I think he's okay to use at $6,600, but I don't feel the most confident there. While Jermichael Green at $5,900 and Jarrell Martin at $5,100, I would take Martin over Green just because I'm saving $800, and I think he's got higher upside and probably a similar floor. To be honest, at center, Marc Gasol, $8,500. That's expensive, obviously. The matchup is just super, super good. There is an element of risk, as I said, with Tyreek. If they get too far in front, now that they've actually won this game against Denver, will they sit him down the stretch and cap him at 28 or 29 minutes? I think that's a concern. But I do think this matchup means that even in 29 minutes, he could give you 42 points. So I don't think that he is a bad option at all. Deontay Davis, pretty hard to use him. Although, the matchup means that in 20 minutes, could he have 12 and 7 with 3 blocks? Sure, he absolutely could. So maybe in a tournament, that 3,800 might be a little bit high there. And then you've got Jarrett Allen, who saw his minutes go back up last game, but I'm not totally into him at 4,800. Just feels like that price is probably just a little bit too high. On DraftKings, I like Gasol at 79 and I like Damari at 55. That's a great number for Carroll. I think LeVert at 54 is also more appealing. Tyreek at 8,000, a little too high, as is D'Angelo Russell, I believe, while Rondae at 6,400 has a little bit of value over there on DraftKings as well. Let's go on to the next game now. We're talking Denver Nuggets. We're talking Miami Heat. The Nuggets just really shit the bed over the weekend. Losing to the Grizzlies is just absolutely horrible from them, and they probably won't make the playoffs now on the back of some honestly mystifying losses. For the Heat, Whiteside and Wade are already ruled out. At point guard, Goran, the Iron Shoulder Dragic, 6,700 for Iron Shoulder. I like him a lot here. Positive matchup, no Wade or Whiteside to suck up usage. I really like Dragic here. While Tyler Johnson at 4,900, I think he's got 35 upside and he is a strong tournament guy. While the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, it's a negative matchup for Murray, but he can easily drop a 40. He's averaging 36.5 over the last five, which is, you know, above value at 7,000, but I don't feel total confidence just given the negative nature of his matchup here. Although it probably comes down a little bit without Whiteside in the paint. At shooting guard, the Jukes at $4,000. Wayne Ellington, very little interest from me there, while Farton Will Barton, 6,600. Likely will start again with Gaz Harris sidelined with that knee injury. Barton at 6,600. I think that's a pretty good bet that he goes for over 30 here. At small forward, we're looking at Joshy Richardson, 5,600. No Wade. He had 29 last game, coming off a sore foot and didn't shoot that well. Totally fine with using him. I think he should exceed that, no problem. While Baby Neck Wilson Chandler is as up and down as a player gets. Tournament maybe, but I just think there are better options to go. While Justice Winslow had been playing really well, but stunk last game. Only 17 points in that last game. He's at 5,400. I don't mind going back to the well there with Winslow, but it wouldn't be a high priority guy. At power forward, Paulie Millsap's been atrocious, really, from a DFS point of view. Still only at 6,500, but not really returning to that value. If you think he's going to get back to it, and not every sign at the beginning of the season when he's healthy indicated that he would, then you throw him into a tournament. I think you can probably do better, much like using a guy like Jim Johnson at 45 or Bam Adebayo at 36. Both of those guys have been exceeding that value with Whiteside out, and wouldn't you know it, Whiteside's out again. So I think there's value in both of those players here. While Kelly Olynyk at 54, same story, averaging 31 over his last five, and at 5,400, give me 30 and I'm wrapped. So there's value in all three of those guys. Yeah, I'd probably look to prioritize a player like Adebayo at 3,600, save myself some salary. But the guy with the highest upside there is clearly Johnson at 4,500. As for the centers, you've got Nikola Jokic at $10,000. He's averaging 51 over his last three. I think he's in line to go for another 50 here. I think he's totally fine to use in cash without necessarily being a high priority player. On DraftKings, I love Jokic on DraftKings. 8,800 is a great, great price. Farton, Will Barton, and Joshy Richardson, also some pretty solid cash guys. While Paulie Millsap's down to 5,700, I think that's the right time to pounce on him and use him in a tournament because he could very comfortably get you 40 at 5,700. That's a pretty decent return on your investment there. Adebayo at 4,900, a lot of the value from him is taken away just by that price being as high as it is. The second last game is the Golden State Warriors and the San Antonio Spurs. No Steph, no KD, no Clay, no Omri Caspi for Golden State, no Kawhi Leonard for the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs are favored by 6.5 points here at home, and the total is 206. The Warriors also have five guys who are probable: Pat McCaw, Quinn Cook, Andre Iguodala, Kevon Looney, and Zaza Pachulia. We would assume that all those guys start. The Warriors have been extra cautious with utilizing their injury report all season. You see so many guys appear as probable on that report. At point guard, Pat Mills is at 4,200. I think you can forget about that one. While Quinn Cook is now up to 5,200. I talked about him earlier. He'd been killing it. In fact, he's averaging 34 over the last three. The matchup is a bit of a negative here for Cook, but I do think that you can use him given how well that he's been playing and the large load of minutes that he's been receiving. Shawnee Livingston at 3,900 and Pat McCaw coming back would be the only, they'd be the guys that might be able to take a little bit away from Cook. At shooting guard, Uncle P, Nick Young's at 5,500. I feel like with what he's doing, the shots, they're going to be there. He's going to take them. And he's hitting them at a decent enough rate. The usage is fine. At 5,500, he should be able to work his way into 26 or 27 points pretty comfortably. Dan Green at 5,000 has been starting and putting up some okay numbers, but I don't think we should have a high degree of confidence in Danny Green, especially when so much of his value comes from the defensive numbers. At small forward, Kyle Anderson at 5,600. He plays very well against the Warriors. He averages in the last three times against Golden State 43 points. Keep an eye on that. The Warriors aren't known to be extra judicious with their passes. Anderson does like getting his hands on a lot of balls.
Giggity!
And he does get steals. He can facilitate stuff. So at 5,600, I feel like he is not a bad cash option. And this is one of those opportunities where he does have tournament value. And that's not normally the case for Kyle Anderson. Iguodala's at 4,700. They're still really easing him in. It appears like his days of being a stat stuffer are completely done. there's no one else around, and he's not really putting up big numbers, so it's hard to really rely upon him. While Rudy Gay at 4,200, he had 34 points last game, a decent output from him, but really only a tournament guy. At power forward, LaMarcus Aldridge has done very well last couple of times against the Warriors. He's at 9,200. Absolutely no worries with using LaMarcus here. I think that's a fairly solid cash one. While David West and Jordy Bell, probably a little bit too overpriced. Draymond Green's the other one we want to look at. He's at 8,500. He is putting up, you know, high 40s, low 50s in numbers, and that's absolutely fine. A pretty strong cash option to use here. Gasol's at 5,800. I would only want to use him as a tournament guy just because of, will he play 15? Will he play 27 coming off the bench? All of those things are in play with Popovich. While Zaza Pachulia at 3,700. The minutes are there. The production's been okay. I just don't see him as being this great DFS option. The DraftKings side of things, no one I really love. You know, could use Nick Young at 5,000. There's value there in him. Didn't talk about DeJounte Murray on Fangio. He's probably a little bit overpriced, same as he is on DraftKings. Powell and Kyle Anderson have some value on DraftKings as well. And I do really like LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,400. All right. Let's go on to the last game of the night. We're talking Detroit Pistons. We're talking Sacramento Kings. The Pistons are favored by 2.5, and the total is 204 points. Will Zach Randolph play? We don't know. Will Vince Carter play? Will Garrett Temple get a night off? Costa Kufos? All that stuff's in play for the Kings, and we never find out about those situations early. In fact, most of the times we don't find out until the first quarter as who's going to rest. At point guard, De'Aaron Foxy Fox is at 5,700. Hasn't really been crushing those numbers recently. He's okay. He's not a bad cash guy, but there's still a level of volatility in what he does without an exceptionally high floor. So not a great combo. Dwight Bikes is playing okay recently, and Ish Smith at 5,000. I don't want either of those guys though. Shooting guards, we're looking at Bogdan at 4,800, has been struggling a bit, but a guy who hasn't has been Buddrick Hield. He's at 6,400, so it's a big jump, but he's averaging 41 over his last three. Not being critical of Hield, but I do have to give him credit. He has played exceptionally well these last three or four games. That price is probably a little bit high. He can easily beat it because we've seen it the last couple of games. I'm not sure I have full confidence in his floor being 33 points. So I think I'd look at him more as a tournament guy, whereas Luki Kennard at 3,900, I like what I see from Kennard. I don't like what I see from the coach, so that would leave him to be a guy I'd leave alone. At small forward, Reggie Bullock's at 5,700. Consistent, but consistently a $5,000 player, a $4,900 player. So very little interest there. Same with Justin Jackson, who's seen his minutes plummet recently. At power forward, Skal Labissiere's at 5,500. Not really doing too much since returning from his injury. The opportunity's there for him, but not really super keen. While Blake Griffin at 81, this is a great opportunity for Blake, so I'd be okay with using Griffo here in cash, but probably lean more towards tournaments. At center, you've got Costa Kufos, but the one we want to look at really is Andre Drummond. 10,600, a super positive matchup for Drummo. Should be able to get close to 50 here. I like him. While Cauley Stein at 7,100, it's been okay, but probably not right to that level, but I don't think that he would be a waste of a tournament spot. On DraftKings, I like Cauley Stein at 56. Now, that is a great spot for Cauley Stein. That's a super cheap price. While Drummond at 89, I love both of those guys for cash. I think Griffin at 86 is not really feeling as good as what he is on FanDuel. That would be a fade from me. While Bud Hield is at 5,900. So not as exorbitant as he is on FanDuel, but still possibly a little bit high to use outside of tournaments. All right, let's go wrap this up by looking at the other sites quickly. On Yahoo for tournaments, Embiid and LaMarcus Aldridge are some tournament guys, as is LeVert, Manny Moutier, Frank the Tank Kaminsky, Antonio Blakeney, Chris Felizio, Deontay Davis, and Luki Kennard. And for cash and tournaments, we're looking at the Muppet, Kyle Korver, Andre Iguodala, Reggie Bullock, Bam Adebayo, Olynyk, Budrick, Campaign, Jezalam, The Hammer, Marc Gasol, Julius Randle, Benny Simmons, and Andre Drummond. On Moneyball for tournaments, you've got The Process, Joel Embiid. We've got Kyle Anderson, De'Aaron Fox, Daz Collison, Antonio Blakeney, Chris Felizio, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and for cash and tournaments, Quinny Cook, Jeff Green, Jim Johnson, Bam Adebayo, Joshy Richardson, Uncle P, Campaign, Hollis Jefferson, Farton, Will Barton, The Iron Shoulder, Jeremy Lamb, D'Angelo Russell, The Hammer, Marc Gasol, Draymond Green, Julius Randle, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Andre Drummond. And on Draft Stars for tournaments, The Hammer, D'Angelo Russell, Isaiah Thomas, Pau Gasol, De'Aaron Fox, Kyle Anderson, Bojan Bogdanovic, Chris Felizio. And for cash and tournaments, we've got Blakeney, Bam Adebayo, Campaign, Nick Young, Tim Hardaway, Farton, Will Barton, Corley Stein, Jez Lamb, Punch Bob, LaMarcus Aldridge, Julius Randle, Andre Drummond, Benny Simmons, and Joel Embiid. Make sure you guys check out the Locked On NBA podcast. I hosted today's show. We talked with David Locke about the Utah Jazz. We talked with Sam Packard about the Boston Celtics and Aliko Carter about the Golden State Warriors and their injury concerns. And you can follow all of the Locked On podcasts at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter and on Facebook. You can also find this podcast wherever you find good podcasts. Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star rating, leave a review. It's a great way of helping this show. And hey, if this show's given you any sort of way into winning a championship or making it to the playoffs, go and leave a review. It's a great way of shouting out your own success over there. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Rajon Rondo.